Okay, so we are now recording. Today is Thursday, September 24th, 2020. My name is Ellie Dassler, and I am talking with Sarah Colbert over Zoom. And we're going to be talking about Sarah's experiences since the start of the 2020 COVID-19 pandemic. So Sarah, let's just start. I'm going to ask you to kind of introduce yourself. And just maybe describe a little bit about what your daily life has been like over the past couple months.
Okay. My name is Sarah Colbert. I am a critical care IST nurse at the hospital at Bowling Green Medical Center, and have been there for about 8.5 years. And I also teach at Western Kentucky University. I teach nursing clinicals, fundamental clinicals. So the nursing students coming in, they start to learn their skills firsthand in that class. That coincides with COVID because when COVID started, it was actually, the release was during spring break of the university, and I came back to work. They had not brought the students back. It was all in question of when they were coming back. And this is one class that you can't do hands-on, or can't do, not hands-on, you can't do it computer-wise. It has to be hands-on. So it made it very difficult to, we didn't know what we were going to do officially. So my spring semester ended up finishing with those students at the 1st of August this year. Mm-hmm. They had to come back in smaller numbers and smaller groups with big restrictions, 6 feet distance, the masks, cleaning certain things, not touching other things. So that changed that whole environment and still has to this day. And then hospital-wide, it was very scary. When it initially, after that spring break, I had taken a vacation, I'd come home, and I was probably one of the first few nurses to have to potentially be with or a potential COVID patient. And it was very scary because nobody knew anything. Nobody knew anything at the time, where this was really going or what it was. And so the fear, and my first thought was, you know, I'm not married. I don't have kids. I don't have a family, but I have older elderly parents. And, the minute I was with one of these patients, I felt like my life was going to be cut off from a lot of people. And essentially it was, because the fear was so great. So I felt very isolated.
Hey, Sarah. If you can hear me, it says that your bandwidth is low. You might need to move into a different room or something.
Through all this. And
are you back?
I'm back.
I can hear you now.
I moved as close as I can to my internet connection.
Okay.
So, sorry.
That's okay. If I could get you to back up a little bit, because I think I missed some of what you were saying there. You said that when you first started caring for COVID patients at the medical center, that you felt like your life was going to be cut off.
Yes, essentially that was kind of the fear because nobody knew anything about this. Isolated from friends and family. And that is what happened. Some of my best friends were my neighbor, terrified. They were scared to be around me. They weren't going to be around me. And my family, my parents are elderly and, you know, have some health issues, breathing issues. And they were ultimately scared. It was probably close to 2.5 months before I actually was able to spend time with them. And you know, it psychologically and mentally, that was really hard to deal with. And you know, and that was my fear when I got told I was going to be taking care of this patient, that separation, which at the time I didn't know the extent of how much that separation would happen. It was just a fear of, I'm going to be shut off from the world now, you know, because we didn't know. We didn't know. And then I ended up taking care of another patient. And then they had shortly opened our COVID unit at the hospital. And I ended up volunteering because I realized I had better protection there than I did in the rest of the hospital. I had all the gear and all the protection that I needed to take care of these patients and felt safe. I felt safer there than I did in the rest of the hospital.
Wow. So you felt safer because of the resources you had, or why did you feel safer in the COVID unit than in the rest of the hospital?
It was the resources. Masks were limited. Initially masks were not to be worn in other areas of the hospital because of the fear. Physicians, doctors, surgeons, nursing staff, patients, there was a ton of fear around this, and they didn't like, even with flu patients, they really didn't want masks being worn, just like if there was potential or whatnot, because of just the fear that it was creating. So on the COVID unit, it wasn't a question. You were gonna wear an N95 mask, and you know, you walked on, you had the mask on. Now, it was hard days. It has been hard days working when you're there for 13 to 14 hours, and you get a 30-minute lunch break, and then you may get 2 15-minute breaks out of this mask. Otherwise, you're wearing a mask for that entire time. And it's not just the cloth masks. It's, you know, the N95 or I think it's a P100 mask, which looks like the painter's masks. Mm-hmm. That is a super tight fit, goes around the head, and it seals. But again, that stuff was provided there on the COVID unit where it was not allowed because the resources were not there to be get distributed throughout the rest of the hospital.
So let's see. Before you took your leave from the hospital at the beginning of August, had you been working on the COVID ward up until that point?
Yes. That was my permanent place of work. Even though I am considered internal staffing and I float, that was just where I was scheduled to work all the time, each day.
What was the support system like on the COVID ward?
Honestly, it was the best team work that I have seen in years as a nurse. And that was something huge. Each nurse that worked up there, because when we initially started, we didn't have CNAs on the floor. We were drawing our own labs. We had respiratory therapists and essentially nurses. That's the staff that was up there. And the teamwork and was unreal because you had to have help. You know, some of these patients, when they got critically ill, they're on ventilators, they're sick. You know, some may weigh 250 pounds, 300 pounds. You've got to help to them, clean them, keep them comfortable. And teamwork was inevitable. You had teamwork up there. And the ones, it was because everybody volunteered. That's essentially who was working this COVID unit. Some were being, you know, they had to float there for the day if we were short staffed, they were pulled from a different unit. But the majority of the team members up there were volunteer basis. So that made a huge difference. And that, like I said, I hadn't seen that type of teamwork in years as far as physically, mentally, emotionally, you know. We were all going through the same stuff.
Yeah. I was going to ask, you mentioned before why, part of why you chose to volunteer to stay on that ward. But what role do you think that played in that teamwork part? You said that it was inevitable and everybody there had volunteered to be there. Can you speak some more about that?
I think just by it being our choice, there's a lot of things in healthcare that, whether it be a CNA or a phlebotomist or a nurse, that we don't necessarily get to choose who we're taking care of or what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And the freedom to go, hey, I'm choosing this. You know, and it's, the patient load was a little different, but they were also very, you know, the patients are demanding. And when they're sick, they're really, really sick. So because of that, I think the choice made it that much better. Mm-hmm. And the other reason, not just because of the equipment, and one reason, you know, and I'm going to reflect back on a friend of mine who is older, has older parents, but also gets to keep her grandbaby. Mm-hmm. She was terrified to have to go to COVID. And I'm like, you know, yes, I'm going to be separated from my parents. I don't have children. I don't have kids at home, or even two or one, but they're scared to death to be around them and get them sick. I guess in a sense have less to lose as far as volunteering, you know, than somebody else.
You said that the patient load was different on the COVID ward. What do you mean by that? What was caring for the patients like?
So if you were caring for critical care patients, the ratio would be 1, 2, or 3, typically. You're not going to have any more than 3 for the critical care patients. Mm-hmm. And that includes people on a ventilator, their oxygen demands are a lot they may be on drips, such as pressors to stabilize their blood pressure. And then you also ended up with other elements that brought them in. They may be DKA with, they were critical care patients. And then MedSurg, they maintain it at 4 to 1, or right now, patient ratio to 1 on a MedSurg floor, give or take room for a pretty lengthy amount of time in there as long, because you try to bundle all your stuff together in meds, doing eliminate the in and out.
All right. Thank you. You broke up there for a minute, so I just want to make sure that I understood what you were saying. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine.
Okay, great. So you were saying that in the COVID ward, you would have no more than 3 patients that you were working with at one time, but that their level of care was different and that they would be there for longer?
So, okay, yes. So critical care, there's 2 sections basically to the COVID unit.
Okay.
There's like a critical care section and then a med-surg section. Mm. And med-surg just means they're not critically...
Okay.
They're not critical at that point. It doesn't mean that they can't change to that, which has happened many times. You know, they come in, they're only requiring 1 or 2 liters of oxygen, and then the next day they're on a high flow or V60, potentially needing to be intubated. So there was always movement of patients on the floors or on the floor. And then, so you're... critical care patients, the ratio would be 1, 2, or 3, depending on the need of care that they had. Mm-hmm. And then your med surge was typically, they tried to hold off at 4 patients with a med surge group. You could potentially have 5. It's just that, you know, because they're COVID patients, the gear, everything you're doing, that it just requires a whole lot more when you go in a room.
Yeah. So how did that differ from the floating work that you had done as a nurse in other wards before the start of COVID?
Probably the biggest thing is the gear that you're wearing, mm-hmm. The gowns that we wear. Honestly, the gowns that we have are made out of Tyvek material, which is what is used on houses, like the house wrap.
And so somebody has made homemade ones and donated them so we could reuse them and wipe them and clean them and sterilize them without them breaking down. They're very thick. They're very hot. So that, the mask, the gloving, all of that, when you would go into a patient's room on COVID, you're going to try to make sure you have everything that you're going to need and complete all of what you need to while you're in there. Because whereas med-surg, you may go in and be like, oh, I need to go get that. It's, you have to be more considerate of your time and what supplies you need, what, you know, because you're not going to go in and out, because what you're doing is spreading those germs that much more. Med-surg, it's not as, or even in ICU, it's not as critical that you get all of your supplies. You want to, because you want to save time. You're going to be just as busy. Don't get me wrong. Any other place in the hospital is extremely busy, but it's just a different kind of busy. And you're not tied in a room necessarily for as long as you are when you're on in a room on our COVID floors.
So it's a different kind of busy. What do you mean by that? Meaning that you don't move around as much?
So different kind of busy. When I am working, I'm going to use a med-surg floor as an example instead of ICU or CCU. But on a med-surg floor, you may have 6, 7, 8 patients. So you're trying to give your medicines and do your physical assessments. You know, that's the first thing when you get on shift. That's what you want to do first. And when you have 6 to 8 patients, that's a lot of stuff you've got to do in a little bit of time. And because not only are you doing the physical things, then you've got to turn around and chart all this stuff. And that's what's so time consuming about nursing anymore, is the charting. And so whereas you're kind of bouncing, and when you finally get free time, you know, for me, when I get free time, what I want to do is I want to get to know my patients. I want to, you know, talk to them, because it's just as much part of their healing process for some of them as it is just giving them medicine. So you just have a lot more patients typically, and a lot more dealings with different doctors, different physicians, different. Most of the COVID patients are very similar to one another, and there's only a handful of doctors that you're dealing with. When there's somebody else in the hospital, you may talk to 5 or 6 doctors on one patient alone. And then you times that by, you've got 6 to 8 patients. So that's where that gets busy. Whereas on COVID, you're going into your room, you're just in your rooms for a lot longer period of times. So even though you don't have the numbers, you're just in those rooms trying to do what you can. Because also for these patients, they can't leave their room. They can't go walk out in the hall. So a lot of them get very lonely. So you may spend quite a bit of time talking to them. You may, you know, they want to get cleaned up. They go to the bathroom, but a lot of it can be just spending time with them. And that, again, you have to coordinate if you're needing to give them a bath or pull them up or change them or anything like that. If they can't do it for themselves, you've got to coordinate that with another staff member. So it just makes it a little more challenging. There's not as many staff, like as far as, you know, CNAs, there's not as many hands usually on the floor on COVID as there are on the other floors, that there's somebody that you can grab to come in and help, whether it be PT, RT, another nurse, or another tech or anything like that. So.
Yeah. I know, of course, you can't really talk about specific individual patients, but what was it like, being able to, trying to get to know the patients on the COVID ward?
It just like anybody in general, each person's different. The biggest thing that would break my heart with these patients is the loneliness and the anxiety. And that's something that I've seen. The more anxious somebody is, the worse their condition gets. And so the fear, you know, because it's still, even today, it's a lot of unknowns that we don't, you know, we're still trying to figure it out. We're still trying to battle it, get answers, things that actually help work. And it's the fear of the unknown is, and that's when you just, you talk to people. And, you know, I have found that with patients that have a large faith, seem to do a little bit better because they, and that's true in healthcare. For me, that's true across the board. When people get terminal illnesses or certain diagnoses is told to them, the ones that have a strong faith, they seem to cope better with it than the ones that don't. Not that that, you know, to each their own, there's no judgment there at all, but it's just how some people cope with certain things. But getting to know, you know, and then there's also when they've been in the hospital for 2 or 3 weeks and they've seen the same faces and the same, it makes some of them get more comfortable. They feel more relaxed. They enjoy seeing certain faces come in because they feel more familiar with them. When there's those others that are just like, they're done. They're ready to go home. They want out of this place. They feel trapped. So then they start getting very irritable. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, and it's hard. You know, I've said 100 times, I don't know how, if I was one of these patients, I don't think I would be able to do this very well. Because I'm used to, I mean, if anything, just walking out in the hall, and they can't do it. You know, they're confined to their room, and that's it. Which the rooms are the biggest rooms in the hospital, but still, that doesn't matter. It's one room.
Yeah. So,
and so each person's different. Some people want to be left alone. Some people want more attention. And some people want to talk. And that's just part of the joy in healthcare. Like that's, I've always been a talker, and I've always been, when I have a chance, I like to get to know my patients, and it just makes them more comfortable. Nobody typically wants to be in the hospital. If they're in the right mind, they don't want to be there. So there's no reason to make their stay that much more miserable. So if something else is going on in another room that has caused frustration, I try to leave it at the door and walk in and, you know, talk to that patient. Just like there anybody else that I know.
Yeah, you've spoken to this a little bit, but you said that sometimes for some patients who are there for a long time, getting to see the same faces of you, the healthcare workers, was helpful. What was it like for you seeing the same faces of the patients who were there for 2 or 3 weeks at a time?
Different emotions. The ones that you see getting better, it's awesome because you're seeing improvement. The ones that have been there and you can see per their labs, per the physical assessment, per things are not going well, and it's heartbreaking. So the ones though that you start to see improvement and that fear starts to subside and they're able to finally sit up on the side of the bed, because most of us don't think that's any issue, but for these people, it was like running a marathon. Mm-hmm. You know, seeing that is, that's so rewarding because it's like what we're doing, it pays off. And, you know, when we, and there have been a couple of things that have made news, but one in particular was a patient that was in the hospital for a very long time. And his family was crazy supportive. And I'm not saying anything HIPAA-wise, you know, it was all put in the news, but when he left, it was amazing. It was such joy that he lived, he survived, when for a while, none of us probably thought that was going to happen. It was just, and then he called us, like he FaceTimed us on the floor, because that's what a lot of the doctors do. They'll FaceTime so they can see their patients instead of actually rounding up on the floor. He FaceTimed the staff and his wife and talking to him rather than seeing him with a ventilator down was huge. It's like, okay, you know, yes, there's some really sad stories, but there are some amazing success stories with this.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Maybe we'll come back to some of that in a bit, but, What about when you would come home from working on the COVID ward? What was it like to either prepare to leave the hospital or to get home from the hospital on those days?
And so I would change at the hospital. Mm-hmm. When it was time for me to be off, I would change into whatever I wore that morning, some comfortable clothes, different shoes. And I would take my shoes off and put those as soon as I got home. Shoes went in the garage. And even though these were clean clothes, mm-hmm. And I just put them on just after working, immediately threw everything in the washer and would go straight to the shower. Even like my dog, she would meet me at the door, but I didn't love on her. I didn't do anything like that. I went straight to the shower before I did anything. And I typically, when I'm working, I do that a lot anyway, but not to that degree. You know, I would probably love on my dog, take her out, that kind of stuff. But it's just, and I'm, it's just the germs. You don't know what's, you know, you could potentially pass. My biggest thing is, and I tell people, wash your hands. Mm-hmm. That, you know, there's all these rules with the masks and the stuff, but I, you know, I'm just like, wash your hands. That's the biggest thing, because you use your hands to touch anything and everything. So, but, and then I would come home and I would like essentially decompress, and just relax. I would get something to eat, or I'd sit down. A lot of times I'm really close to my mom and dad. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times when I'm leaving the hospital, like the first thing I do is call my mom, and it may be a minute conversation. It may be a 30-minute conversation. But usually just enough to go, hey, how are you? How was your day? And, you know, I never tell them any details or anything like that, but you know, it's just nice to hear somebody's voice that you're familiar with and it's not inside the hospital walls.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier that you and your parents had been afraid to see each other at the beginning. Have you been able to see your parents in person at all since the start of the pandemic, or just talking?
Yes. I have now. And essentially it was actually my dad who was more fearful than my mother. So the very first encounter, like we went through Easter and things like that holiday. And, I remember they had cooked dinner and I had worked or whatever, but they met me halfway from where they live and where I live and had food in the back of the truck. And then, like, I got out and put it in my car. So there was no physical contact initially. But the first time that I actually spent time with them was out in the lawn, like, or out in the yard at their house. And they had spaced some chairs out distance-wise. And, you know, and I understood, you know, because I would never have forgiven myself had I gotten my parents sick. Because they were socially distancing, you know, from everybody. And each person deals with this in their own way. My mom, like I said, finally got to the point. She was like, I will still be cautious and I still do certain things, but I'm going to see my child. Mm. So, and then my dad basically was the same way.
Those first couple times when you saw them and either didn't have a lot of contact or were, you know, sitting on the lawn, what did those visits feel like? What was it like to see them in that capacity?
It was nice to see, just to see and appreciate, you know, mom, you know, they're not real big huggers and they've never been like what I call touchy-feely, you know, parents or anything like that. But I think that kind of made them appreciate at that point because it was just, we can't touch each other. You know, there was that distance of we're going to keep distance, but you know, and it was not mean. It wasn't anything like that. It was just, again, the fear of the unknown for everybody. I can use my sister as an example. I felt like that one was a better, when I first went to go see her, because she realized I needed, you know, yes, we all needed distance, but we also needed people. Like I needed, so they and her spouse had invited me up to their house in Columbus, Ohio, and they designated the downstairs bathroom as mine. They would not use it. They would not touch anything in it. The upstairs was theirs. I wasn't to use it, wasn't to go in it, designated a certain bedroom. And then pretty much the whole time that I was there throughout the weekend, we stayed outside. There wasn't a whole lot of, you know, and they're like, I hope you don't feel awkward. I said, no, it's not a thing. Like, it's okay. It is what it is right now. We just need to be safe about it. So they were very cautious about things, but they were also very kind about it. It's not that I was such a germ in a sense that they were being exposed to, but they wanted to be conscientious of what was going on and protect themselves, but at the same time protect emotionally everyone involved.
Yeah, you said that your sister recognized that you needed people, and that was part of like protecting you all emotionally. Can you say some more about that? What did you mean by that? When you felt like you needed people, what was that like?
So I need people in my life. And not just through a video or phone or my parents were never like huggers or anything like that, but that is something that's big in my life. Like, I'm a hugger. If I see somebody, you don't have to say words, but it's like, if I know something is going on with somebody, you can hug them, and the energy that's transferred between people, you know, and that's a whole, so I dabble in a lot of things. Also, I'm a massage therapist. And so I do believe in the transference of energies and things like that. And I think being around people, and you don't get that in a video connection. You don't get that on a phone connection. Just the energy of people in general, just being around somebody, you know, it's kind of like being in a room and you don't have to say anything. Just the presence of somebody can make you feel so much better, or vice versa. You can be in a room and not know the person and you can't stand them. You know, it's, there's just something entirely different about that. And, you know, I get some of that from my animals, but I'm also one, I was a traveler before all this. I loved going and I loved doing. I love being at home, but I love experiencing new things and being around new people. And, you know, that was something that was majorly changed. And so when everybody has kind of isolated themselves, it was just hard. So that's kind of what I meant by, you know, my sister was trying to protect me and essentially giving me something she knew I needed.
Yeah. Yeah. You said you were a traveler. What has that change been like, not being able to go out and experience things? And maybe have you tried to do anything to kind of counteract that?
I've done a lot of kayaking this summer, which I messed up my foot at the worst time because the weather was gorgeous after that. But I spent a lot of time kayaking with, and that's something you could do with friends and keep your distance, you know, especially if you loaded them up yourself and, you know, your kayaks on different vehicles, stuff like that. And I think overall, that's probably been one of the most rewarding things about this is it's kind of slowed everybody down. And for me, it's kind of been rewarding for the fact that I don't always have to go places. There's stuff that I can do outside. And it also, I mean, it slowed me down. Like, I didn't always have to be on go 100% of the time. So I had to stop and I had to enjoy the moments for what they were. I think people who had the families and the kids were out of school and people were off work, I think there was an appreciation. It probably drove them crazy at times, but I think there's been an appreciation for their family, not just by themselves. They're walking as families. It'll be a husband and a wife, and then, or, you know, their partner, whoever it is, and with their kids, just everybody strolling together. And, you know, they're not with friends. It's just their family. Mm-hmm. And I think that has been a very rewarding thing in this because it's made people stop when it was always what's next on the agenda. What's next? We've got to keep moving. We're going to be late. And I think that has been one good thing that's come out of this. But for me, yeah, the whole, I doing a lot of kayaking, doing yard work, I plant a garden every year. This one was a lot bigger this summer. And then, you know, just doing whatever needed to be done outside pretty much. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So you mentioned you injured your foot, you said beginning of August.
I've been off work since the 1st of August. I injured it at the end of July.
Okay. So what has daily life been like for you since then, since you've been off of work?
A little more different. I feel lazy and I don't like that as much. I've worked a lot of puzzles because essentially I was in a cast and I was non-weight bearing. So getting around was difficult, and I would go outside, you know, I wouldn't have a problem being outside, but when it was really hot, it was really miserable because the whole process of taking a shower and doing all of that, it was just, you know, I'm the person who will take 2 showers a day and I have no problem going out inside and sweating and doing whatever I need to, but I want to be able to clean up when I come in. And that was not the case with this. It was just, it was a lot more difficult to being non-weight bearing for over about 4 weeks once the cast was on. And then, and I'm in a boot now, so I have more freedom with it and getting out and still keeping distance. But I, you know, there have been friends over time since COVID has started that they're like, hey, what are you doing? Do you want to go? Do you want to come over and have a movie night with us and the kids, you know? And so there have been people that have reached out, and I haven't gone since COVID as much. And then especially since the foot injury that it's even been more restricted. So I've had several people reach out to me. Hey, what are you doing? Do you want to do anything? Done game nights. Like I've had some friends, like we still kind of keep distance and we keep it small. Mm-hmm. But like this Friday night, I'm going to cook dinner. And there's about 5 of us getting together and we're having a game night. So simple things like that. Are you still there?
Yes, I am. Okay. Yeah. What's it like when you have the small groups of friends over?
It's like it was, you know. Mm-hmm. Nobody acts weird, which a lot of the friends that I have at all, but typically people that work at the hospital or work in healthcare, you know, they know the precautions, like we all know where we're at, what we're doing, the precautions that we're taking. And so that group is a little different than probably previous groups of doing, because our neighborhood would have a female game night once a month. And that has not been started back. You know, there's talk about starting it back, but there's still fear. And how big is too many? And what are people doing? And are they being cautious? Are they not? Are they living like this doesn't exist? You know, that kind of thing. So the ones that I have done game night with, we all know where we kind of stand on this and the precautions that we take.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you said earlier that since you've been, when you were in your non-load-bearing cast, that made you feel lazy. What did you mean by that, that you felt lazy?
So, again, I love doing, like, my yard work and stuff like that. I couldn't even mow my yard. And doing laundry and doing, you know, I didn't get as much stuff dirty, but I always, like, there's certain chores that I don't mind doing at all, and I probably overdo them, and I had to ask for help. And that I'm like, I feel like I'm sitting on my rump not doing anything, you know. And so somebody would come and mow my yard, somebody else, you know, they noticed my weeds were kind of high in my flower bed, so they just came over one day and started pulling them for me. And I'm like, I wouldn't, you know. And they're like, I know, Sarah. I was like, if I could hobble out there, I would hobble out there and I'd pull them myself. And they're like, I know. Like, it's okay that you ask for help. And that's just the independence, you know, and that's just my character and that's who I am. I've gotten better about it as I've gotten older. Certain things, when I need help, I ask for help. I don't try to lift certain things that are too heavy and hurt myself, you know, whereas I definitely would do that before. You know, and it's, I think it's part of a maturity too, you know, it's just, but for me, I felt like I was being lazy. It's, you know, I'm not going to getting to go to the gym. I'm not getting out to play golf. I'm not, you know, that kind of stuff. It's pretty much more indoor stuff.
Yeah.
And there's only so much indoor stuff you can actually do.
Did you say you play golf?
I do. I played golf and since I was seven. I played in college. And then I actually, in all of this, I had two tournaments that I was supposed to play in. So I had to cancel playing in those. So that's, you know, I didn't want to have to pull out of those, but you know, it is, I can't go out and play in a cast or a boot or, you know, time being what it is.
Yeah. So did you have to pull out of the tournaments because of your injury or because of the pandemic?
No, this was actually because of the injury.
Okay.
Yeah. They've still done a couple of scrambles. Like there was one scramble here in town for, it's a fundraiser for somebody who passed away suddenly, a few years ago. And then one was like a couples tournament that I've played in every year. And most of them have been canceled throughout the summer, but this was one that hadn't been. And you're still not like, I'm with my partner playing, but you can still keep your distance with everybody.
Sure.
So, but I kept my distance. I didn't go.
What did that feel like to have to pull out of those?
Not good, because I really, in my mind, I'm like, okay, can I hobble out and actually play in a boot? And I was talking to my partner about it and he's like, what would your doctor say? I'm like, he would say, absolutely not. You can't do that. And I was like, but I could potentially try. And then like one of the first days that I was clear to put weight on the boot, I had to walk down a hill. And I was like, oh no, 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 I'm out. Yeah. There's no way, because I'm going to hurt myself. Cause I knew where I was playing and it was a real hilly course. And I'm like, I'm not going to be able to get up and down from a green easily. And I'm like, it's not worth it. I need my foot better. I need to be able to work and then I can play.
Yeah. So do you have, you're still not back at work at the hospital yet, right? Cause you're still in the boot.
I'm still in my boot. I just started PT with it. And so it's been a slow process and, you know, my foot's still sore. Range of motion is very limited with it. And so it's going to take some time, but it's getting better. Are you still there?
I am. Yeah.
Okay. My phone popped up with something. So
it's okay. No worries. I was going to ask if there's anything right now that you are, that you're actually looking forward to.
As crazy as it sounds, like I'm probably being off for as long as I've been off, looking forward to going back to work when I'm able to. I miss seeing the people. I don't necessarily miss the chaos. But I miss seeing people and feeling like I'm doing something productive. You know, that is, that's one thing. And then, you know, as far as plans and stuff go, COVID has changed a lot of that. You know, because I always usually had a trip to look forward to. And that's kind of been, you know, on the kind of not there, not really planning for stuff like that right now, because it's still just unknown. And you know, do you risk it, do you not? And so yeah, that kind of stuff is still just, and I'm looking forward to, hopefully I can get back out on the water one time before it gets really, really cold. So I took my mom kayaking for the very first time in her life. She went kayaking at 70 years old.
Wow.
The two that my foot really, really started hurting. So she committed to go and I was like, I'm not backing out. I'm going to stop, you know, we're going to do this. And she loved it. And then there was a doctor actually at the hospital, him and his wife, we had made a plan to go kayaking that next weekend. And he's never been. And so that's probably, that's one thing that I'm looking forward to, is that, and hopefully before I can do that at least one more time.
You said you normally have like a trip that you're looking forward to in the future, and that you can't necessarily do that now because there are so many unknowns. I guess what does that feel like? What is the difference between not having something like that, you know, in the future when you're used to having those kind of plans?
This is probably inappropriate words, but it sucks. Mm. It sucks. It's always something, like, especially when work has been crazy busy and hard, it's like, okay, or you've worked 40 to 60 hours one week or whatnot, and it's just been nonstop. And it gives me a purpose as to why I'm working. I want to enjoy those moments, and I want to experience things and see things that I've never gotten to before. And so, you know, that's usually a New Year's resolution for me. Mm. It's not the typical lose weight, which it should be for me, but it's not. I usually pick a place that I've never been before, or I'm going to do something that I've never done before. Mm. That's my New Year's resolution. So that just makes things a little different. You know, I think it'll make me appreciate when I'm able, you know, when I do go, mm-hmm. I'm going to just enjoy it that much more, but I want it to be where I am enjoying it, not fearful, and not with people who are fearful or being careless at the same time too.
Yeah. So that's usually one of your New Year's resolutions is to go somewhere to do something you've never done before. Have you thought about how you could still accomplish that even during the pandemic?
Yeah, there's a lot of places, like even close, that you can, the hiking and the, you know, that kind of stuff. And there's some beautiful falls around this area. Cummings Falls down in Nashville, Red River Gorge. MJ, the person that put me in contact with you, we've talked about before COVID, we were going to go up to Red River Gorge. They have these tree houses that you can essentially camp in.
Oh, cool.
And then like go hiking and stuff. But I need my foot better before I do that kind of stuff. So that kind of limits those things. But one of the other trips, like a trip that my mother and I were going to take, was going to go out west. And I think several people have, but we were going to, you know, basically camp is what we were going to do, get to national parks. But at that time, things were still kind of up in the air. Some of the national parks weren't really open for camping. And so I don't want to be limited. If we take a trip like that, I don't want it to be limited. I want us to be able to do what we want to do.
Right.
And so, you know, that's still in the plan, and that will eventually happen at some point, mm-hmm. but it's just, you know, a little bit at a time.
So you said you just started physical therapy for your foot. What's it like to, kind of get to be a patient right now? You're used to being on the other side of things.
It's good. You know, I'm one of those that I will do what I'm told to. And, you know, for the most part, everything has been good. Feel that it's already gotten stronger. My Achilles tendon, which is not, which is my Achilles tendon and the range of motion there. And there's some things we do that it hurts, but I just usually go, whew, that's a lot. But I keep going because I know that's what my foot needs. It's breaking up some stuff. It, you know, it is what it is. But
Hey, Sarah.
Hey, Ellie.
Hey, can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
I can hear you.
Okay. I was going to say what might help is, and this might be a little bit awkward, but if we both turn our video off, that might decrease the bandwidth.
Okay.
So that might help. So why don't we try that? I know I don't want to take up too much of your afternoon, so we can get ready to wrap up here in a few minutes. But if we both just have audio turned on, that might help.
Can you hear me?
I can. Can you hear me?
Hey, Ellie.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can, yes.
Okay. Sorry about that. I don't
know.
Okay. I wasn't moving or anything. I'm just like, who knows why.
Yeah, no, it's not anybody's fault sometimes. It just, internet just gets funky. So yeah, you were saying that you, sometimes the PT is uncomfortable, but you just want to push yourself through it because you know it's what your foot needs.
Yes. You know, and as a patient, you know, they're not going to have me do something that I shouldn't do. Mm-hmm. And I'm going by my free will to ultimately get better. So I'm going to try to do everything they encourage me and tell me to do. Cause I want to be able to use it the way that I have been without restrictions and without it hurting or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to be mindful of our time here. And thank you so much again for you've been so generous with sharing your experiences and everything here. Really appreciate it. But before we wrap up, is there anything that we haven't talked about yet that you think is important to share, maybe that you expected we would talk about but we haven't, or just that you think is important to get out there?
In regards to COVID with this, what I... you know, the biggest thing, and it's a simple task, but again, just, you know, basically washing your hands.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an advocate for the mask. Do I like wearing one? No, I don't like wearing one. But if it's going to potentially save somebody's life or keep them from getting sick, then that's great. And I think that's a misconception too, as far as wearing masks. I'm not wearing a mask unless I'm on the COVID unit. That's to protect me. It's essentially like telling a child to cover their mouth when they cough.
Mm.
It's to keep stuff from spreading everywhere. And that's what the mask is doing. Is it hot? Is it uncomfortable? Yes, it is, you know, especially when it's warm days. But my thought with that is if it potentially can save one person, then what does it, and it doesn't harm you or hurt you, then what's, except people, you know, they just don't want to be told to do something. But that's my biggest thing, is just essentially do it to be kind for others, and if it could save them, great, and if it doesn't and it doesn't hurt you, then there's really no harm there. And then just wash your hands. But that's true with like anything. Even before COVID, if people just wash their hands, they probably wouldn't get as sick as they do.
Right.
And that may sound goofy, but that's how I feel.
No, that's important. I guess when you see, there's a lot in the news about people who are maybe reluctant to wear masks or, like you said, have that misunderstanding about what exactly wearing a mask is supposed to do. How do you feel when you see stuff like that?
Frustrated. Very frustrated there, you know, and I can say it about one of my really close friends made a post on Facebook. And it was about numbers of COVID and this and that. And then there were people who posted on there that it was a hoax and it was just stuff made up by nurses and doctors to create fear and that it didn't exist and that stuff. And I just, you know, in that situation, I messaged that individual and I was like, I don't want to argue, but do you really feel like this is fake? And, you know, their comment was no, but I'm just over all the mess of it. I think it's been blown up. I'm like, okay. And so, and that's all that was said about it, but it hurts. Like when I see something like that or I hear something, because what I want to say is you've not, and usually when I hear people make those comments, my first thought is you've not lost somebody dear to you to this. And you've not witnessed it. And those people are very fortunate and they're very lucky. And no, the numbers may not be extremely high death rate wise. But at the same time, you know, and I did tell somebody, I'm like, even if it was three, it doesn't matter, because those three people, that's somebody's mom, that's somebody's daughter, that's somebody's brother, sister, you know, that's somebody that means somebody to something. And if there's ways that we can potentially stop this from spreading or hurting somebody else, then so be it. But when I see comments or I hear people, it's very frustrating and internally kind of infuriates me, because I really want to just go, please stop being selfish, because that's what you're being. But like, if there's a harm or if somebody has breathing difficulties or has severe asthma and they can't wear the masks, that's one thing. You know, if there's truly a health condition, but when it's just because they don't want to, I really want to go, quit being selfish.
Yeah. Well, so maybe so we can try to end this conversation on a high note, as hard to come by as those can be these days. What is something that, maybe that you see happening or that has happened with you that has made you feel hopeful?
Something that I mentioned earlier, I think one of the biggest positives that I think I've seen come out of this is the appreciation of family, of friendships, of being there for people when, you know, there's not somebody else that can be. I think there has been a kindness come out of some people in so many ways that you would have never imagined. And I think people have genuinely reached out to others to see how they're doing. Is there anything they can help them with? I think there's an appreciation for just people to people in some ways. And I think because of that, I think relationships will be stronger. I think people are kinder. And to me, like the family thing that I see, when I see families who are out walking, and or they're playing out in their yard, whereas they, you know, wouldn't have done that before because they were rushing to this or that, and you know, or having dinner at a kitchen table, you know, whereas they weren't doing those things before. I think there's something to that was missed before, and they may not have known any different because that's just what they've been doing for years. And I think that part is amazing. For the better. I think it's a great thing. And just an appreciation of traveling, appreciation of family, appreciation for medicine. That it's there and it's available. Even when we don't have all the answers, the fact that, you know, those things exist, I don't know, that makes me very excited when I see those things. Even if it came from a disease. You know, there's definitely positives that have come out of this for sure.
Yeah. Well, Sarah, thank you again so much for talking with me today. I really enjoyed getting to hear some of what your life has been like. Appreciate it a lot, you sharing.
You're very welcome. Thanks for asking and having this connection, and hopefully I didn't bore you too much or talk your head off. So
absolutely not. Everything you said was great. So I will send you I'll send you an email in the next couple of days just reminding about that release form.
Okay.
But otherwise, if you have anything, any other questions about, you know, this project with Oral History Commission or anything, feel free to reach out at any time.
Okay. And if you need anything else from me, feel free to reach out too. And
thank you.
And I will try to print that release off here in just a second and actually send it back to you.
Okay.
So great. That way I don't forget it.
Great. Take your time. Thank you. Well, and good luck with, as you continue to heal, good luck with your physical therapy and everything. And yeah.
Thanks. I very much appreciate it. Enjoyed talking to you as well.
All right. Great. Thanks. Have a great rest of your day, Sarah.
You too, Ellie.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm.